Well, hello, everybody. First and foremost, my name is Jeremiah, and I'm an alcoholic. I will start off by saying that I made a mistake, and I need to apologize to somebody right now, this very minute. And that is because I was still under the understanding that we had a 10-minute speaker before me. That's how much I know, because I've not been to this meeting for quite some time. So, on his behalf, Randy was gracious enough to accept this offer that I bestowed upon him. He's here in the crowd, and he gets to enjoy me this whole time. So that gives me a lot more time to share. So let's just start with that. Thank you, Randy, for accepting that, and I apologize for not asking before I asked you. So, on that note, how many people in this room recognize themselves as an alcoholic? Just by raising your hand. I know I'm one. So it looks like we've got a pretty good room full of us here. Yeah, crazy. I'm 43 years old. I've suffered from alcoholism longer than I can honestly, you know, put in like a number. There's this book that I have with me, and I brought it to the front. I don't know if anybody has seen this book. I don't have a cover on it anymore. It got, you know, kind of lost in the mix, and it's pretty tore up, and there's pages marked up and all these things. And I think it says Alcoholics Anonymous on the front of it, but it's not really highlighted, just on the edge a little bit. I opened this book up, and I have a sponsor, and my sponsor said, so open the very first page of this book, and what it says, and it says nothing. And he told me that's exactly what I know. I know nothing. Whoa, you know, that kind of comes as a shocker. So, this is where I'm starting. I'm an alcoholic. I was willing to come into a program and be completely honest with myself and give this program a chance. And the things that I have learned about myself in a very short time have just been incredibly great. I am happier than I have been since maybe I was a child. You know, there's a lot of things to be grateful for, but I'm very fortunate that I got to come to these rooms. You know, a lot of people don't get to come to these rooms, so I'm just so grateful for that. So we'll just start off, Jeremiah, as a young boy. Give you my sobriety date. It is May 18th, 2014. So that gives me a little over 18 months of continuous sobriety. This is the longest that I have been completely sober from the neck up since I was probably about 15 years old. So, you know, I've been, you know, messing around with alcohol, and other things are definitely part of my story. You know, definitely alcohol was the thing in my life, though. So I absolutely recognize myself as an alcoholic. My story starts, my drinking career starts, apparently sometime around 2 years old. I was just learning how to walk, you know, one or two, and my parents and grandparents, they had social parties, you know. I used to like to stick my fingers in drinks, and I liked that, and I did that. This is what I'm told. How strange is that, you know? I didn't know this stuff, but, you know, here I am 2 years old, you know, already starting on this great path. So, you know, we progressed, you know, until my early teen years. I must have been 14, 15 years old. I started, you know, messing around with different things, hanging out with different crowds, and wanted to find something to ease my personal grief that I felt, this hole that I felt as a person. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that I'm the oldest of three boys, come from a really great family. No alcoholics. My mom is non-alcoholic. My dad was non-alcoholic. My dad he was really ill with very serious diabetic complications. He had juvenile diabetes, so he's completely insulin dependent. And I love my dad. He was my everything. You know, it was really meant a lot to me. And being the oldest, I'm really the only son that knew my father being well, to do things with. Well, when I around 10 years old and stuff is when my dad's health really started to take a downward spiral, and complications from surgeries and different things happening later. I took that upon myself. It hurt me, you know, really bad. And what I've learned is that, you know, that's definitely, you know, a resentment that I had, maybe not against my dad directly, but against myself and what I felt. That hole that was left there, I couldn't do these things with my father like my friends could with their dads. And so I ventured off into different places and I found alcohol, and alcohol, yeah, it worked. it definitely worked. I didn't come up to this to the this place, you know, I don't have a script. So this is my first time speaking, so just bear with me. I'm gonna try to like move this in a forward direction, but I'm sure there's gonna be some backing up and going forward and all that stuff. So here I am, about 14, 15 years old. You know, I didn't play any type of sports. You know, no baseball, no footballs like that. My father was interested in stuff, but he wasn't able to do this with me, and I just said, nah, that wasn't for me. And so my hobbies were, riding bicycles, just getting into random mischief is really what my hobby was, you know. And it just, you know, I found myself hanging out with kids that shared the same interests as me, and that was random mischief. And, you know, alcohol was, it came upon us. And I remember one of my early drinking careers, of all places, was in the Boy Scouts. I was in the Boy Scouts. And, you know, there's older scouts in there that had access to alcohol. And so, you know, of course, me being a young impressionable guy, yeah, I want to check this stuff out too. And so I never forget that time. And we were all camping, and alcohol, man, I had fun. That just made that camping trip that much more fun. Well, my Boy Scout career didn't last much longer than that, because all of a sudden, it wasn't cool to be in the Boy Scouts, but drinking was fun, and I could drink with anybody. It didn't have to be these people. So here I go, freshman year in high school. Started off kind of slow. I kind of really, really, really nervous. You know, really, really nervous my early year in high school. I really didn't. I didn't do a whole lot of drinking then. You know, I think I had this year of like, let's just focus on, I don't know, something. It wasn't alcohol. I don't know what happened. It was my sophomore year is when all things, I was turning 16 years old. I got a driver's license, you know. I didn't have that I'm new to school feeling. All these things that, all of a sudden, it's like, I felt like I blossomed. And when I mean blossom, I mean alcohol, when it gets in my system and stuff, man, there is not a stranger out there, you know. I love talking, and I'll talk your ear off. I'll meet anybody. I don't care. It's fun. It's game on. So sophomore year high school, get my driver's license, meet all these new friends. It was great. Had my license for a total of 3 months, and I got my very first DUI. Wrecked my buddy's truck. Fortunately, nobody got hurt. Yeah, 3 months had my DUI. So, that was a wake-up call. No, not really, you know. I probably didn't drink until the next weekend. So, That's when it started. That's when, it really started. It took, and that whole drinking thing, it just kept on going. And, I pushed further away from my parents, further away from some friends that I had, even just previously the year before, you know, when I was actually doing some schoolwork and maybe going in a decent direction. It just started to fall to the wayside, you know. I was more interested in having a good time, enjoying what I felt was just the moment. So, roughly a year later, I get in trouble with alcohol again with the law, and progressively built up within that year was just more drinking. My parents they're just beside themselves. My dad's illness is just, you know, it's progressive. He's gone through a few pancreas transplants by now, and it's just terrible. Terrible at home. I'm drinking myself because, you know, I don't want to be at the house in my dad's illness. I just don't want to deal with it, you know. So I get in trouble again, and my parents decide that they need to, I'm too much. They can't handle it. And so I was entered into a drug and alcohol treatment center. And this was in Santa Barbara, and this was in 1990. So I was 17 years old, and this was my junior year of high school. And I was there for a month. I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was introduced to the Big Buff. And then we did a lot of meetings. You know, the whole structure was really a lot about Alcoholics Anonymous and doing, you know, some of the program work. I didn't do any of these things over here on my right. We'll get to these in a little bit. So I come out of this program. I honestly didn't want to drink. I learned a lot of stuff. You know, I learned a lot of stuff about alcoholics. And, you know, that was all you in this room here and stuff. And a lot of old-timers, smoke-filled rooms. I was absolutely in there. I was like, man, you know, I'm not going to be like them as long as I don't drink this way or don't do that. Little did I know. Yeah. Little did I know how cunning and baffling alcohol can be, and how progressive it is, and how it doesn't matter how smart you are or where you come from, it will win every time. So, come out of there, didn't drink for 6 months. I turned 18, and I decided, well, you know, this is my senior in high school. How am I going to make it through my senior in high school, and, you know, without drinking. Let me enjoy this. I have this freedom in school now because I got these extra school credits, so I didn't have to do all these required classes to get my minimum. That's all I was looking for. I was looking for the bare minimum, you know. I wasn't looking to achieve anything. I wanted out of school because I thought that was just, it wasn't for me. So I had a lot of free time my senior year of high school, and a lot of that time was involved drinking and just messing around, fooling around, and I did that, and I didn't get in trouble. So by me not getting in trouble with the law, was thinking that I got a handle on this stuff, you know, I can do that. I already knew what I was going to do when I graduated high school. I was going to go to the Navy, just like my grandfather did, and unfortunately my dad didn't get to go because of his disabilities, but I have some other members that were in the service, and so I signed up for the Navy in delayed entry program. So I knew where I was going to go after high school. So it was just party on. I was just waiting for the day to come. So I'm going to party till that day came. And so I graduated on stage from high school, which for this guy, complete miracle. I mean, you know, I don't know how I did it. I guess I just was able to fool a lot of people. Really, I found out I was fooling myself, but graduated from high school. 2 months later, I was sent off to the Great Lakes Naval Training Center over next to Chicago, Illinois. And I get there, and man, I had the worst hangover. I'm on a plane flight up there, and the altitude hangover, oh, those things did not mix. Man, that was terrible. And I'm like popping these pills, like niacin and all these things, because, you know, I smoked a lot of weed, man. I did not need to have a dirty test. All my tests have been clean up until this time. So I'm just like, you know, I'm all good, because I didn't smoke weed for at least a few weeks, I thought, before this time. And so I'm just taking all these pills, and that's just making me sick. And I get there, and they're yelling at me, and just doing all these things that, you know, you see on TV. Yeah, a little bit of that. And I'm a week into this whole this whole boot camp thing. So my hangovers, you know, definitely, you know, subsided by then. And so I feel like, oh, cool, I'm in, you know. I obviously passed my P-test because they took that a week ago. Well, here comes the following week. I get a letter saying to go to such and such building. I go to the building. there it is. It comes up by substance abuse. They know. So here I am disappointed, you know, myself. Well, I found out, yeah, I did not pass my test. So my Navy career didn't last very long. Yeah, a couple weeks. Because I had to wait for a whole nother week for them to finish the paperwork and send me home on a bus. So, yeah, that was good. And so I came back, and my dad's all, you ain't staying. You can't stay here. You know, they found me disappointed. And so they sent me off to a mechanic school in Arizona. And that's where I really learned how to drink. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Them Hawaiians, I tell you. I went to school with all the Hawaiians, and them Hawaiians can drink. Oh, my gosh. And we did a lot of drinking. I really just ramped up there. Always been a beer drinker. Just beer drinker. But I drink a lot of beer. I had that. I mean, that's the only way I could get drunk is a lot of beer. So, you know, I did that. Still didn't get in trouble. Came out of that school and stuff like that. Dilly-dally with some jobs. I've been able to, you know, maintain a job, you know, and drinking. And when I got into my career as a car mechanic, was about a year after I graduated from that school. It took a little while for me to get my resume out and for somebody to finally hire me. And this whole time of drinking, it definitely slowed me down, I guess, you know, started to pick up. So here I am, 21 years old, got my job with this first car company, and man, you know, drinking like the rest of the people I thought would drink, you know. I definitely hung out with some people that drank like I did, and it picked up, you know. I had a girlfriend at the time, and that was like a real hard time for me, because I think that was the first girlfriend that I had that I was willing to maybe let in. And when that relationship ended, man, did my drinking pick up even more than that. It was a hole that, you know, I never felt like that before. You know, that was a very, very hard thing for me at that time to process, and alcohol helped. It helped. Good and bad, you know. If I drank enough, I didn't feel it. But then I would drink, and all of a sudden, my feelings would catch up to me, and then I'm just this crying, babbling idiot. And it's just this total imbalance of feelings. Oh, man, crazy, crazy stuff. So, as the relationship, you know, it went away, because there's no real foundation for anything there, you know. She was younger, she had you know, career goals, and wanted to go to school and do all the smart people stuff. And, you know, I'm just a, you know, basic car mechanic. You know, my goal was just, you know, let's have a good time and let's see what happens. So that ended, and so here I am, just kind of, you know, flailing around. And my dad getting sicker, and you know, I pushed away, and that was a very, very rough time for a few years of my life. And then, you know, as my drinking grew progressively, still wasn't getting in trouble with the law, all right? Still not getting in trouble with the law. So, and this whole time, I'm still drinking and driving. I never stopped drinking and driving. But I just know how to drink and drive, you know, smarter? No. what a foolish concept. I just, that's what I did. I loved to drink and drive. It became almost like a hobby. I thought, if I were to drive, I just like to have my drink. It just made driving for me more enjoyable. Stupid as it might sound, and it is, it just made it that much more enjoyable for me. But I wasn't getting caught, so I'm cool. And must have been about 27 years old. Get a phone call, and this. I'm living back with my parents. I moved out very, very short, very brief amount of time. So here I'm 27 years old, still living with my parents because I'm at the house just in case my mom needs me for my dad because my dad's illness and stuff like that. So that was my scapegoat, you know, for me to be there, you know, for help and stuff like that. And really what I was doing is not there for help. It was just, it was easy. It was convenient. I was taking the easy way out and they were letting me stay there. Yeah. Get a phone call and, 12:30, close to midnight. And I remember it because I was really drunk. Just must have came home shortly before this, but, phone call from one of my middle brother, his best friend called and said, "Hey, Jacob was just hit by a car and he died." So this is my middle brother, was hit and killed by a drunk driver in Santa Barbara. And so I'm the oldest, this is the middle one. And, yeah, I mean, talk about completely just, my parents were beside themselves, you know. And, I mean, you know, As a parent myself, and I'm sure I have a lot of parents out there, you know, your child shouldn't go before you go. You know, that's just not the way it should work. You know, my dad was beside himself because there's been quite a few times already where he's been by his deathbed. And so to get that phone call and to hear my father in the other room with a sound that I've never heard before, you know, I mean, that got my attention. But did it stop me from drinking? Yeah, for a whole week. And, no, you know, having my brother hit and killed by a drunk driver did not get my attention. So, at that time, living in my folks' house and stuff, we get some people stopping by to pay their condolences and stuff. You know, my brother, what a neat young man he was. He was 22 years old when this happened. Lot of friends, touched a lot of people's lives. You know, really cool to have this onpouring of support in the community come. And it's funny that one of the people that actually came to the house was a coworker of my mom. And this coworker actually became my wife, and she sits with me here today, and I have two children also with this wonderful person. To have this right here is not because of me. It's because of the fact that I was willing to come into this room and do something completely different. And that was to open this book of Alcoholics Anonymous and be honest with myself and know that I don't know anything. And, you know, I had to start from the beginning, from the very first step. I became powerless over alcohol. Shortly after I met this woman, I got to meet her whole family, and, you know, we're together straight, you know, love this person. Relationship, it grew, but my alcoholism kept getting forged like that. She didn't drink like me, you know, and you know, about a year later, about a year after my About a year after my brother died, my dad passed from his illness. And so here's another moment of, like, wow, you know, life is, you know, you're here one day and you're gone the next. Different, though, you know. You have my brother on one hand that was hit and killed by a tragic accident. My dad, I got to be there when he took his last breath in his bed. Two deaths, two people very close to me, but two totally different circumstances, you know. But I'm an alcoholic, so I don't look at things the same way as normal people. So I just said, all right, well, I need some more alcohol, you know. I need to, you know, I don't need to deal or feel this. I don't need to feel this. And so that's what I did. I kept drinking. And then about 3 months after that, I found out that I had stage 3, almost stage 4 melanoma. I was right on the borderline. I shouldn't be alive as far as the statistics are saying. But I am. And I was diagnosed in 1999, so that's 15 years, and I'm still cancer-free. Yeah, and then so now here is my life in the balance, you know? Oh, okay. So what do I do? Oh, I have a brand new baby. I have a wife, and I have alcohol. And what do I choose? I choose alcohol. I had something great in front of me, did not know it, or didn't want to know it. I just knew that alcohol could keep me numb, and I wanted to feel that numbness. I wanted to live, and I felt that alcohol is what made me happy. And so I kept on drinking. And a couple years after I went through my treatments with the radiation, immunotherapy, you know, did all the stuff and coming back with test positive stuff, I'm all right, cool. And so now I'm starting to feel like, you know, now it's back to normal life, you know. There's not people feeling so, oh my goodness, Jeremy, what can I do for you? How can I help you and stuff? And, you know, people feeling sorry for me, you know, for what I was going through. And, yeah, that was a nice feeling, you know. But then it was just back to reality, you know. And then I just, I've already started to, you know, hurt the people that I love. And then I'm the sole provider for income. And so I don't take any responsibilities for any of this stuff. So I just decide to, I want to do what I want to do, and I like to drink and drive. And so finally came time for me to get caught. And I did. I got caught by the park rangers at our Great Oceano Dunes State Park. And I was driving my vehicle exactly 15 miles an hour. Yeah. Wasn't speeding. Wasn't swerving, but I was just in the right place at the right time for them to get me. And So, but that one only counted as my first DUI though, because my other one was so long ago. So that was my first DUI. So, yeah, you know, they didn't really come down too hard on me. That's what I thought. You know, I mean, you know. What, a month without a driver's license, you know? Yeah, I had to pay, you know, a few $1,000 fine. You can make all these payments. It wasn't that bad. I quit drinking, though. I finally quit drinking. So, things are great, you know? I'm quit drinking. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go to church. You know, I think that can really help me. So I started to go to church. You know, I grew up with a with a God of my own understanding. And so why not just, let's just carry this on. Let's be different. So I started going to church and doing this stuff. And I wasn't drinking. But I was doing other things. I was doing what some people might refer to as marijuana maintenance. And yeah, I wasn't doing anything that I have now learned in this big book. 3 years I didn't drink any alcohol. Was I sober? No, I was not sober. I was what you would refer to as really a dry drunk. Because why did I start drinking again? Well, because I found out that alcohol obviously wasn't my problem. So why did I stop drinking? You know, let's go back to drinking and you know, and just be a gentleman drinker, you know, and drink. Yeah, that lasted for not even a week, you know, and it was just on, you know. And should I drink and drive? Well, you know what? I got the DUI back then. All right, I'll just be smarter about it. You know, what are my chances of getting another one anytime soon? So, here I am, back to drinking, and my relationship, you know, it wasn't getting any better, even though I wasn't drinking. I mean, definitely, from my recollection of that particular time in my life with my wife, is I was still a jerk. I was still doing very selfish things. You know, it was all about me and doing what Jeremy wanted to do to make Jeremy happy. And this is exactly what I did. And I think we had my daughter around that time, and then we decided to get married. All these things, you know, came together, and my wedding night, I got hammer drunk, and didn't do the things that you should do, that the person that you asked to marry me should do. On their wedding night, did not treat that person with respect. None of those things. Just made a complete fool of myself. And that's just, it's incredible. My alcoholism just slowly kept progressing. It kept getting worse. I kept hurting more and more people. But I had a job, you know? I worked hard. Of course I deserved to, you know, drink when I wanted to drink. I brought home the paycheck, you know. You should, you know, respect me because of this. This should be, you know, this should be okay. Isn't this good enough, you know? Yeah. That's an alcoholic thinking right there, for sure. So, you know, we gather a few more years of my style of drinking, you know. My kids, they were involved in my drinking because I needed a way to go drink the way that I wanted to drink. And so I would have them cruise along with me in my truck. And I would drink with them in my vehicle. I talk about, yeah. Yeah, talk about great parenting, you know. Absolutely, yeah. Good parenting skills here. Yeah, definitely don't. That's not advice, in case anybody's looking at that. That's something you don't do. You don't drink and drive, especially with your kids. Just not something good to do. So I did that, you know. And I did that a lot. And just got worse. And worse. You know, I didn't drink with people so much anymore because they didn't really drink the way that I did, you know. I like to, you know, drink different ways than the people that I used to associate with. You know, I would go and hide out. I would go on these long drives and I would just have a lot of, I make my own ice chest, you know? Plastic bag of ice in a cardboard box. I mean, what more do you need? You know, I was creative all the time. And I would be out And, you know, I didn't want to get DUIs. And so what was my thinking? Listen, back roads, you know. I love nature. God, back roads, fire roads, any type of road, any place that's not in, like, a city limit. Well, that's the funny thing is when I get drinking and I really get drinking and stuff and I'm by myself for too long, I need people, man. And so here I go. I go and drink and then come back into the town and then I'm looking for bars because I want to hang out and socialize with some people. So this kind of lead up to when I got in this room. Because it took another DUI. And this time it's my third one. Second one as far as the state's concerned. So, you know, they come down on you a lot harder. But man, you know, when I got that DUI, I surrendered. I honestly did. You know, I just said, God, thank you. And I had dreams before that, like, you know what, I'm not going to stop drinking this way until something happens. And thank God nobody got hurt. Nobody got hurt. I did not get in an accident. I was parked next to a 7-Eleven, just got done eating a big old thing of nachos, passed out in my truck, heater on, 2 o'clock in the morning. I had a pair of shorts on. I don't know what happened to the rest of my clothes. Passed out in my truck. I get knocked on the window. And there's a couple sheriff's officers saying, hey, you know, they give me a sobriety test and, you know, here I'm off and going and stuff. But, man, I tell you, you know, I had a spiritual experience. That right then, it was there, you know. And I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous from my youth. You know, I knew that there was something out there. I couldn't do it myself. I couldn't come to this room. It took a gift card. That's what I'm calling it. It took a gift card from the judge. You know, this judge, I felt that she was very lenient on me because she required me not all these other things that I had found out, all these ankle bracelets and all this other monitoring that a lot of other people get. She said, I want you to go to 90 meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want your signature. Well, I'm like, great. I was going to come anyways. So, all right, cool. Let's just do this. And, you know, if I did anything worthwhile, you know, when I drank, I give my all. So I'm like, all right, cool. I'm not going to drink anymore. Let's do something different here. Let's come to Alcoholics Anonymous. All right, what do I need to do? What do I need to do? All right, I need to get a sponsor. Sponsor. Yeah, well, all right, a sponsor is somebody that has gone through the steps before, that knows the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. All right, cool. I've got a sponsor. All right, so what do I do? Oh. Well, I didn't take me too long to get through those first three steps that you see up there. You know, I knew that I had a God in my life, you know, and I was definitely willing to surrender myself to this God, all right? That wasn't the most difficult part for me. When I break it down, the more that I look at it, though, you know, and I truly go back and look at it, it's like, man, I've had God work in my life. How am I alive today? Obviously, there's some reason that this higher power wants me alive today. Okay, all right, cool. So let's do something about this. And so I, you know, when I was working on step four, that was a doozy, you know, building up all these things that, you know, that you guys have heard about and you know, some other items that I didn't need to get into. And I was willing to let another human being in on all these things about myself and, you know, where I was at. Man, what a weight lifted. Incredible feeling. That was just a great experience to have that relieved. Wonderful. I got into learning a little bit more about myself in the couple steps, you know. Steps 6 and 7, he had character defects. Now, I know that probably a lot of us suffer from character defects. Some are willing to do something about it, and some aren't. And hey, that's fine. I had to recognize all these character defects that I have, and I recognize them on a daily basis because I have these character defects, and a lot of them will probably stay with me for the rest of my life. But you know what? I got a willingness to do something about them. You know, I'm not just going to sit there and go, oh, okay, I'm this way, and that's fine, and you're going to have to deal with it. No. I'm not in this world to make Jeremy happy. I'm not in this world to be, to you know, have everybody go, look at Jeremy, you know, let's do what he wants to do. You know, I'm in this world here just to be the best person that I can, that my higher power wants me to be, so that I can help others around me in and out of these rooms. And when I really came to that conclusion, it changed everything. I'm grateful for what Alcoholics Anonymous has given to me. You know, I have gone through all of my steps as thoroughly as I could, you know. I'm definitely not perfect, and I have to remember that, because perfectionism I suffer from, and if it wasn't perfect, I wasn't going to do it, plain and simple. So, no, I just practice. I just do the best I can. If I truly give this thing that we call life, if I give it my best, and I'm doing my best, and I'm asking for my higher power's guidance every day, and I'm doing that deal, you know what? That's okay. That's okay. And I got to remember that I have tomorrow to try it all over again. So I'm just grateful that I was asked to come up here and share with all of you. And, you know, if you got something out of that, wonderful. If you didn't, hey, there's always other speakers out there. So thanks a lot, everybody.
Right on. Let's see. So let's thank Jeremy one more time. Right on, Jeremy. Right on, brother. Now I'll turn the meeting back over to our secretary, Tom.
Thanks, sir. Good job, Lee.